If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
All right. Oh, man, I am really excited to be here with my friend LJR, Luke Justin Roberts. Man, we just solved the hard problem of consciousness immediately before this conversation. So, I mean, like everything else just feels like, I don't know, like
icing on the cake.
Icing on the cake. Luke, you've probably had more of an impact on my personal evolution with like videography than anyone else in my life. And I remember before we met, I was using this like webcam and it was very like amateurish. Like, hi guys, I'm Michael. And it was like, like I had the string lights, but there's like a before Luke, after Luke in terms of video quality. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about how, you know, production quality isn't the most important thing. And like, oh, you can do anything on an iPhone. I think there's a lot of truth to like, you know, the heart and the core is like probably the most important thing. But man, like it makes a pretty big impact when you have professional assets just in terms of immediate recognition and quality. I really think that us connecting, you sharing your video tips for me personally with, you know, Modern Musician has made a massive impact. So I'm really grateful for you and for your role in video production and excited to have you on the podcast today to talk a little bit about that journey, you know, for you as a musician, you with your, you know, video career. I know now you help other artists to create high quality, you know, content, whether they're doing it on their iPhone or on a professional setup. Looking forward to connecting on the podcast, and thank you for the role that you've played in helping me to level up my own presentation and how we show up here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure working with you and seeing your evolution over time, you know, not just with the video production stuff that we've done, but seeing like, you know, what you work on and you're always trying to do more to meet the need for artists, which is a tough problem to solve, you know, and I imagine would open you up to a lot of judgment at times too from different people. So I think it's a courageous thing to like to really continue to pursue that, you know, as you find your way in that journey. So yeah, it's been fun hanging out in all of our deep conversations. So yeah, man, it's great to be here.
Thanks, man. I mean, it's also probably worth noting that this whole setup exists as well because you helped to build the studio. You're like one of the founding members who came out here when this was nothing and helped us to build this. So
this is fun. This is a lot of fun. It was like we got all the walls painted, figured out where we were going to shoot everything, kind of lighting equipment set up. The logo, I think, was like, I knew we needed that. I'm like, I'm glad you got that because that thing is so sick.
So. It is pretty cool. Cool. So, Luke, would love to hear a little bit about your background and story and sort of your quote unquote hero's journey as it relates to your upbringing, as it relates to like your music and videography. And I'm curious, how did you go from not understanding this whole world of videography to becoming, you know, someone that I consider like a bit of a master. You're like a Yoda of videography.
Thanks, man. what is it? Do or do not. There is no try.
Yes.
Michael, you will.
Okay. I think our work is done here.
Time to go. So I started off, I mean, I've always been musical ever since I was young. My dad had a band, and so I learned how to play drums at a very young age. I thought that was just the easiest instrument because you just hit stuff. A lot of people think it's the hardest, but I don't understand that because to me it's like any sort of complex fingering is the hardest thing. Mm. But music was always a part of my life from then onward. You know, I was part of the church band. I was also part of a band with my brothers. And I was just always playing, you know, whether it was band practice or Sunday mornings or Friday nights or, you know, gigs with my brothers and stuff like that. So huge part of my life. And I didn't really think at the beginning that I wanted to do it professionally and really make that my like thing. But over time, as I, you know, went to college and went to engineering school, I ended up going for my PhD at the University of Maryland. I didn't finish that. I was 4 years in and I got like a couple journal papers published. And then realized I don't really want to do this. This isn't making me feel fulfilled in life. Mm. This isn't bringing me joy. And I switched careers. Mm. And this is where the videography really started to come in. I had started to film a couple of music videos in like late college because I had seen what Tyler Ward was doing, Boyce Avenue, Sam Tsai. You know, there are people like this that were really, really talented. And they made these amazing covers of these popular songs at the time, and they were stripped back but great videography, very cinematic, you know, great lighting and just beautiful arrangements of these songs. And I thought that was really inspiring, and I thought maybe I could try to do some of that. Mm. Well, I didn't know anybody who shot videos especially like that. I remember working with some people for the band, and I was thinking like, oh, these videos are gonna be great. And then I saw them and they were just trash. They were just so bad. And I was like, I can't, this is not at all what it's supposed to be. It's like some corporate guy, you know, tried to shoot a music video and it looked nothing, didn't look artistic at all. So that was very, you know, that was disappointing at the time. But when I started to decide, like, just like when I was really young, I thought like, oh, I can, if I don't have something, like my family didn't have a lot of money growing up. So if I didn't have something, my mom said, well, just make it. Hmm. And I was like, okay. So I kind of did that for most things. This would be like Halloween costumes especially, or any sort of, like, I loved like swords and Nerf guns, and I would love playing like lightsabers and stuff. And you know, a lot of these we would make different Nerf guns, we would make different, you know, like holsters for the Nerf guns. I'd make those out of cardboard and duct tape, and I'd make all my own armor. I'd make a Lord of the Rings, you know, second age elven armor with all like the gold, like banded armor, or the Rohirrim's, you know, scale robe. And there were like 1,000 individual scales that I like cut out of duct tape to like put onto this robe and try to make it hyper realistic. So I'd always had this idea of like, if I don't have the thing, you know, make it. And so I started doing that with video. I was like, well, why can't I do this? I just tried to look at the video that I was seeing that I loved, and like, where are the lights? Like, what makes this so good? And I realized, okay, you can kind of tell where some of the lights are. They're literally in the video. But you can also guess at where the other lights are based on where the light is on people's faces. And so I started to experiment with that. I started getting work lights from Home Depot and just putting them in different places in the room. And one of the big things I noticed was like having a lot of backlight. It was always present in all the videos I liked. So it created this cool sort of edging effect around people where it's like this, almost like a halo, like a rim of light around the shape, around the silhouette of a person. I just fell in love with doing this. And as I started to do more covers, I just enjoyed making more and more videos and trying to advance a little bit, do something a little bit different with every video. And over time, people started really liking what it was that I did with my videos for my music. And they offered to pay me to make theirs. And I was like, this is cool. So I started to say yes. And that slowly turned into a little video production company where now I work with a ton of different artists, filming all sorts of content for them. And it's also turned into the thing that can really fund my life in terms of basic expenses, but also, you know, cover like if I want to invest in some marketing or, you know, a new, like a really good mix. Like, I'm not a mixing engineer, don't ever plan to be, but I can pay for that now. because, you know, I have enough video work that's doing that. So that's been really cool to experience that. And it was, you know, it's been very difficult to go through the ups and downs of that, because obviously as an entrepreneur, I mean, you know, things are up and then some things are down, and then like, and it's all based on like you and your performance and how much you're able to kind of do. And there's all sorts of blocks that you have that you don't realize that you kind of have to overcome. And there are a lot of those that were in there in terms of creating real discipline and, you know, pushing through the things that I just really hated doing that were really tedious and difficult or would trigger my nervous system dysregulation or whatever. And learning kind of all these things to be able to find ways to overcome that, to get to where I'm at now, where I feel very confident that, you know, I can quickly make a really high quality video, whether it's for myself or for an artist. So that's kind of like the quick version of kind of how I've got to where I'm at now with the video stuff. And so now I teach other people how to do it on their own, whether it's, you know, with their cell phone. I can teach them how to do it on a nice camera too, but I find it's typically a little bit easier on the phone just because everybody's already familiar with the phone, lower budget, you know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, you know, there's something interesting, I think, about your, what stands out about your story is how you have sort of a natural genius zone for videography or a passion. And, you know, everyone is different. I think Einstein said, what, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, then it might think it grew up thinking its whole life it's stupid.
Yeah.
But you had the self-awareness to realize after, you know, having gone to education for a certain, you know, role, you're like, this is not it. This is not what brings me to life. And you discovered sort of this passion for creativity and videography, and that's turned into a genius zone that's, you know, really empowered you to be able to do all the things that you enjoy in making music. And it does seem like there's, like, everyone is kind of different. We have these different puzzle pieces. We can kind of figure out the things that we resonate with most, and what's our genius zone, or what are we willing to develop, the same way that you had the ability to say, I can create this, I can make this. If I make a decision, I can do this. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question I have for you is, for anyone that's, you know, listening or watching this right now, who part of the purpose of this, you know, conversation is so that we can share some tips and, you know, advice specifically around video production for artists and how to take that into their own hands, or, you know, be able to work with someone to, you know, to do it for them.
Yeah.
So I'd be curious, who do you think, if someone's watching this right now, what are some of the key benefits you think specifically for this topic of video production? Like, why is it worthwhile for them to learn how to master this topic? And who do you think is best suited to, like, get value from going deeper into this world of videography?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to... the first question was, repeat that again.
Mostly like, yeah, what are the biggest reasons why someone should go deeper into this?
Yeah.
If they're kind of on the fence and they're like, oh, that seems cool, but I'm not really an expert at that. Why should they consider diving deeper into it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, especially as an independent artist. The number one way that you get discovered right now is on social media platforms. Mm. And the type of content that gets pushed the most is typically video content. Mm. Not only because the algorithm likes it, but also because people connect best with a person that they can feel like they understand and see and have a chance to understand a little bit about their story. And you get a lot of that from how a person moves, how a person talks, and how they engage with you. It's the closest thing you can come to interacting with the person if they're not right in front of you.
Hmm.
And that's your goal as an artist, is to connect with people, as many people as you can, that share the kind of story that you've gone through in your life, and to present a piece of art to them that's going to resonate and help them feel seen, such that, you know, they feel like they're not alone, right? And ideally, you're kind of helping them in their journey, whether it's, you know, processing through a loss or a change in their life or a season in their life, by giving them a voice to express who they are.
Mm.
And video is the best way to do that. So the other reason that it's important to learn this, I mean, this is just like having videos, it's important for that. If you're going to learn how to do it, this is the ideal situation, I think, for most people, because most people don't really have the budget to hire somebody like me to come out, because that can get expensive. But you don't really need to have somebody like me to come out if you've got the time to be able to learn the skill. Now, it's going to take a long time to really get to the level of like somebody that's super pro, but you don't have to be perfect with it in order to be able to start creating content that people resonate with. Because like you said earlier, it is hugely impactful to have high image quality. But what I teach people is that that doesn't matter at all until you have something of value to give. So good video will only amplify great quality content. And the content is the value that you deliver in the video. So this is why, like, the example I always give is if you're watching a video and it's got great cinematography, but bad audio, like harsh audio, or it doesn't sound good or doesn't resonate emotionally, like, you're probably just going to turn the video off. You're going to stop watching. But if it has really good audio or the content's good, think like your favorite cat video that's like super grainy or whatever, but it's hilarious. And the audio is like, just, you know, it's good enough that the content is there, but the video is like trashy from an iPhone in like 2006 or whatever. You're still going to watch it, and you're still going to share that with friends because it made you laugh. You connected with it, right? Or somebody's just honestly sharing their story about something that you resonate with, and you're like, wow, this makes me think of my friend, you know, Joey or whatever. You want to send that video to Joey. You're not really concerned with the video quality. Video quality will advance the professionalism once you've kind of got that core value offer set up. But a lot of the time, focusing on the image quality a little bit too early can essentially be like trying to put makeup on a pig. And not to say that like people are ugly or whatever, but
pigs are beautiful.
Pigs are beautiful. Actually, yeah, I saw some pigs giving birth on a Facebook video the past couple of days. And I will say that was pretty gross. But yeah, it's you know, that just that old adage of like, where is the real value, right? It's in the essence of who you are and your story, and it's easy to compensate for that by trying to get good at something else that doesn't feel as vulnerable. And I speak as somebody that I think I've done this. A lot of my music career, especially at the beginning, was really focused on, I want to do covers, which, not bad, nothing wrong with covers. I want to make them look really great. But I wasn't leaning as much into telling my story of my life. And I also had a lot of fear around really focusing on my voice. I've always had a lot of imposter syndrome there. Recently, I'm just kind of connecting truly with my mixed voice without as much strain. And that's been a huge jump forward for me. And that's ironically come as over the last couple of years, I've really been focusing on, well, what is my story? How do I really connect with people around that? And the last couple of months, especially on TikTok, I've seen some real resonation with a lot of people, where when you're just honest about what your journey has been and you share music that connects with that, and you know, just like what we had talked about with the kind of content that you're teaching people to create as well, you want to call out your audience such that people know, like, oh, like for me, it's like, if you grew up Christian and don't believe anymore, I make music for you, because I grew up in the church. That was my foundation for meaning and purpose and all that stuff. And then I lost that as I tried to find truth. And so now I make songs largely about that. And that content has resonated so much with people that tried their best to hold on to their relationship with God, their relationship with church, and they couldn't, you know, they got really hurt by the church, right? And so there's many reasons why, you know, people left for, and so I can speak to that because that's just also been my experience. It's not hard, it's just me talking, you know. I'm not trying to be something that I'm not. So yeah, I think I'm beating a dead horse at this point, but I think that that's really the key, is what is the value that you're offering? And then once you've got something, you've got some clarity on that, some direction on that, you can look at increasing your image quality. But before then, it's not really going to help. I mean, I've posted tons of super high quality covers to TikTok without any sort of story attached to it or connecting with people, and they don't go anywhere. They'll get like 300 views. But as soon as I talk about, you know, this stuff where I left church and everything, and here's part of my journey, I'll get like 10,000 views on the video, and it'll make a uptick on my Spotify because people are going over there streaming the song crying, you know, like, I haven't felt seen like this in forever. I was a pastor and I left. after 40 years and I don't have any community anymore, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Cool. So what I'm hearing you say is that image quality, production quality, you know, is an important part of the process at a certain point, but it can't cover up or fix a core root level issue, which is being disconnected with actually who you are and actually sharing your authentic voice and your message. So you help like really by focusing on that first, and then depending on someone's free time or their budget, then you can start to make recommendations for amplifying that message and polishing it. But really at the root, the most important thing really is the heart and the message.
Yep. Totally. I mean, there are some situations where, let's say you want to get booked for gigs, for festivals. Mm-hmm. For that, you know, booking agents aren't really looking for that as much. They're mainly looking for a professional video that's truly live where they can see what you do. Mm. And they go, wow, this, I can see this fitting in my event. So if you're just looking for a really great video that, you know, you're going to use to get bookings for festivals or private, you know, house concerts, you know, things like that are, you know, very high ticket things. I mean, we've had people that, you know, have booked, you know, $4,000 solo shows off of the videos, you know, that we'll shoot for them.
Yeah.
And that's been really cool to see the kind of impact that, you know, something like that has had. So you asked a second question and I don't remember what it was at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that was a good point. So what it sounds like we were just saying is that it depends on also what is the purpose of the video. You know, if it's you know, meant for a high ticket opportunity, then sometimes that polish, you know, can make a big impact in terms of the credibility of, and someone actually is getting an understanding of the value that you're gonna provide to the event, for example.
Yeah.
Cool. So Luke, I know that you've literally created a whole course, you know, around how to master this topic for an independent artist to be able to create high quality videos. And part of this conversation is we're going to kind of peel back and share three of the most valuable nuggets or frameworks or pillars. So I'd love to hear the first one that you'd like to share that you think is, you know, one of those most important pillars that or frameworks that artists need to understand in order to master this topic.
Yeah. The first one I would say is not actually related to a technical aspect of shooting the video. The first one is just to start to avoid a sense of it has to look like X. It's to return to a sense of play and enjoyment when you're creating something. Specifically when, I think as we get older, we lose the connection with this ability to play without judgment. We're so afraid of what other people might think, and that a lot of the times we've internalized that judgment over time, and we judge ourselves and we levy all this shame on ourselves. It's like if you try to learn a new instrument when you're a lot older, this can be harder because you have an idea of like what it's supposed to sound like, and you're comparing yourself against that in your infant stages of learning. And oftentimes it's like, oh, this sucks, this is so bad. And that makes it hard to enjoy that initial process, which makes it hard to move past that initial point.
Permission to suck.
Permission to suck. Yeah, I just started doing this with my own voice, trying to find mixed voice. And literally the past 2 weeks have been transformational for me in finding that. And I've been able to sing like way higher. I mean, I don't think I can do this in front of people yet, but but it's been amazing just really letting that go. And so I encourage you to, anybody that's watching this, to try to really do that such that you can free yourself to not feel like, to experiment, to play around with it, to see what might come out of, you know, a new way of positioning the lights, you know, or a new setting on the camera or a new environment, you know, because oftentimes you have to kind of tweak your shot a little bit to get it to look the way that you want. So you don't just set down the camera and you get good composition, excuse me, and then you're like, all right, sweet, this is it. You hit film. A lot of the time when you're filming something more professional, you want to like, I want to consider the lighting. Lighting is a huge part of video. In fact, this is probably the number one tip that I would give people in general, is you want to have a lot of light, especially when filming with a cell phone camera. The sensors are not as good in low light and they tend to get a lot more noise when you're trying to boost the brightness to make it such that you can see things in the image. So that's one of the big things. Just having a lot of light. The second thing is your lighting position, or the second part about lighting is your lighting position. So where you put them. So I always make sure that I've got a light that's about 45 degrees in front of me shining down.
Yeah.
Because that's going to create some contrast on my face. I want to have some areas that are a little bit darker and some areas that are a little bit brighter. And usually that's like I still want to see detail in the darker areas. I don't want to be pitch black with like, I'm just shrouded in shadow because I'm dramatic. I want it to, you know, have some contrast there. Mm. And then you, and then typically having some type of backlight behind to kind of create that edging around, you know, the shoulders. And specifically, it's going to really show on your hair. That's going to add a real level of cinematic feel to it. Mm. And part of what's happening there is it's separating you from the background.
Mm.
So there's a couple other big tips that I have for people. A lot of the time people will put themselves right in front of a wall. And one of the things that we love to see in videos is depth. Mm. So depth is going to come from two things. It's going to come from A, like the focal distance or the distance in focus, the difference in focus between your subject and the background.
Mm.
And it's also going to come from how close you are to that background.
Mm.
And these are kind of tied together in the way the camera operates. So if you move, if you just move away from the background, you're going to get a lot more blur in the background, no matter what lens you're using, no matter what camera you're using.
Mm.
The more that you get close to something in the background, you're going to get a lot more of that background in focus. So if you have like a bookshelf in the background, for example, it can look pretty good if it's blurred out and you're in focus. Excuse me. But if you're too close to that background, then to that bookshelf, then it's going to be very, very much in focus, and it could be distracting because there's a lot of different books. There's maybe titles you can read. You know, it might be a little bit messy. But if it's in the background and blurred out a little bit, then it can be great. So if you just pull yourself, instead of being 2 feet from the bookshelf, you pull yourself so you're 10 feet away, you're going to get a way better shot just with that. Background's going to be way blurrier. The other thing you can do with that is use a different lens. So like on your iPhone, you got three lenses to choose from, right? If instead of doing the 0.5, you do the 1X or the 2X, as you go up in those numbers, you're going to get more and more blur in the background. It's going to zoom in more, so you might have to pull the camera back farther, but you're going to get way more of a blurry background.
Mm.
And that will really help your shot a lot.
Mm.
Excuse me. Man, it's coffee. I put a lot of honey in my coffee, and I think that's doing it.
There's a bunch of good stuff to kind of unpack there, just everything that you just shared. So the first kind of big pillar that I heard you say is just like giving yourself permission to learn, permission to suck. I feel like that is like such a important starting point, because I mean, I personally can relate with this. I'm guessing that anyone that's watching this as a musician especially can relate to this. First time you pick up an instrument and start trying to play it, like generally it's kind of awkward. It doesn't feel great. You have to, like, you kind of have to go through a period where you're learning. And a willingness to learn, a willingness to not look good, is also what, you know, allows you to take action and learn quickly. So I really resonate with that as like a big pillar and kind of place to start. And what I'm hearing you say with the lighting is really helpful practical tips. I mean, I remember you helped me. I'm a very simple. A simple outfit man. I have like the same outfit that I wear like literally every day. I have like 20 versions of the same shirt. It used to be a black shirt, and the black shirt kind of blended with the background. And I think that you suggested to me, you're like, hey, just thought, you know, if you wear a different color shirt, that's going to help you to create some space for the background. And so I went and I bought like 5 different solid colors and tested out. I'm like, what's going to be my new like main color? And ended up with this one. And I think it made a big difference in terms of, you know, being able to, you know, not look like a floating head with a black background.
Yeah, you got that separation going on. Ironically, I'm wearing a black shirt right now, which I will say, originally we had planned to do this interview a couple of days ago, and we had some cool stuff come up, which moved it to today. But back then, that day, I was wearing a red shirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for that reason.
Classic. I mean, also the, if I'm hearing you correctly, one of the biggest tips around getting a high quality shot is, you know, lighting, kind of first and foremost, 45 degree angle, creating some contrast on your face. Making sure you have a backlight that creates like an edge around your head. And I mean, this is one I feel like until recently we hadn't, I hadn't really learned, but we're kind of doing it right now, which is pulling this desk and the foreground out from the background. So there's more of that, like what, depth of field or yep. like a bokeh effect. Is that what it's called?
Yep. Both great, mm-hmm. great terms for it.
Uh-huh. Well, cool.
Blurry background. It's all the same thing.
Uh-huh. Nice. So, did we kind of like blend into like the second or the third pillars there too, or are we ready
yeah,
to move
I've
on to
definitely
like the
hit like a couple of them, because I would say lighting is the first,
yeah,
and then positioning is uh-huh. the second, and then the first one is really that like being willing to fail, you know,
yeah,
being willing to suck at something uh-huh. and to not shame yourself, and then the other two, lighting and positioning, would be the other big ones. I could totally share more too. I mean, there's so many things that go into, you know, doing it well.
Yeah, let's peel back each of those. I mean, it makes sense. Like those definitely seem like the three most important kind of pillars. So yeah. with lighting, I'm curious, what have you found is like the biggest mistake that people usually make when it comes to lighting?
Yeah, so there's two things. The first is not having it at all. Mm. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It can be totally free. Like you can use a window to do this. If you set yourself up kind of at a 45 degree angle to a window,
mm-hmm.
then that can cast a really wonderful, you know, light on you and create some contrast on your face.
Mm.
It'll give you a lot of light because windows are actually way brighter than we think they are.
Mm.
They're extremely bright. So, and if you have a little, one of those blinds in front of it that's like translucent, that the light still comes through, that can make it such that you've got a more even light, especially if you have like one of those windows that's not just panes. It's got like the wood in it too. Sometimes that can create some shadows if the lighting is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and any sort of shadows typically aren't, you know, super great. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the big mistakes I see, is just not having any lights. I see videographers do this all the time.
Mm.
And it's not, depending on the style that you're going for, like you could do that if you're operating purely with natural light, but usually things look way, way better when you have light. not having enough light is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So typically people don't turn their lights to the right brightness.
Mm.
Or they don't get they think, oh, having just a tiny light is enough.
Mm.
And sometimes in certain contexts, again, it can work, but a lot of the time having a bigger light is going to help a lot.
Mm.
The other thing with lighting is that positioning. People will usually put it like kind of right in front of them or shining straight on their face.
Mm.
And sometimes they just go to like a 45 degree angle and shine this way. And really, like, I forgot to say this earlier, but you also want it up a little bit.
Mm.
So it's kind of shining down at a 45 degree angle
yeah.
as well.
Okay.
So those are big things.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool. So lighting, you want to make sure that it's like kind of above you. And when you say like 45 degree angle, that's kind of like 90, like a flat would be like kind of like 90 degrees. So it's literally kind of like exactly diagonal is kind of what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's what I'd say. Imagine like you're here and there's an arrow pointing from like your eye or from your nose, like up and to the right. Like that's about like where it should be, something uh-huh. like that.
Okay, cool. Okay, awesome. So positioning. So, you know, we know that we need the lights, whether it's natural lights or setting up some lights. Depends on, you know, the room as well, to know like how big of a light you need or small of a light. Can you talk a little bit more about positioning? And, you know, as like an amateur sort of video guy, I understand some of the terms, like, you know, the key light, fill light, backlight.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share kind of the most important things to understand as it relates to positioning?
Yeah. So depth is one of the biggest things we want to see when we're watching a video. That's part of what makes it look really cinematic or professional. One of the things that comes into that is, like we talked about earlier, how far something is behind you. So, you know, like we have right now, like this table is about probably 8 feet out from the wall. Mm. And that gets a lot more, you know, blur behind. That's a big thing.
Mm.
Helping, making sure the space is also very clean. It's going to be a big part of having it feel good and kind of drawing your eye to the right spot. Your shot composition is going to be part of your positioning. So that's where the camera is. a lot of the time people will set up the camera where it's too low and it's kind of pointing up, or it's too high and it's pointing down.
If it's not pointing up, then how will we see the boogers?
That's right. I don't know. But, but it's one of those things where some people will say you always look better from like an angle up. Like if you're taking a cell phone, like a selfie, this does work for selfies. You bring the camera up here to take a photo instead of right here. It's almost always going to look better.
Yeah.
It frames your face a little bit better. You're also like, you look a little bit thinner when you're taking the photo from up here. But when you're doing video stuff, it's too dramatic to have it up there. So usually I'm filming almost exactly at eye level. In fact, we've got the camera, it's pretty much at that, you know, right here as well. And I normally don't actually turn them down or up really at all. It's pretty much level. I might do a slight little down, but it's only like a couple of degrees. It's not like a 45 degree angle, 30, 20, even 10. It's like, it's just a very small, small amount that it's pointing down, if I do that at all. And what I found is that if you have the right shot composition, which is, you know, what you have in your frame, you're going to get a much better shot doing it that way. I've had plenty of people that when I'm shooting them, they're like, oh, don't shoot from low because I'm going to look fat. And it's funny because like they hired me because they know that they want the type of stuff that I shoot. But then the way that I shoot, sometimes they're concerned, but then they see the footage after and they're like, oh, this looks great. Never mind, you know. So that's a big part of that as well. It's kind of where you put the camera and how you angle it.
Okay, awesome. So what I'm hearing you say is that for cinematic videos, you generally want to keep it relatively eye level. You know, with selfies and things, it can be nice to kind of like have it coming down, but generally with like the videography, having it about eye level is going to give you like a better outcome. I'm wondering about like key light, fill light, backlight. Is that stuff important? Is it important you have all three? Can you get away with just like one or two? How does that work as it relates to positioning the lights?
Yeah. So you're talking about 3-point lighting, which is what's taught in general in, you know, film school and stuff like that. And it's great. It's definitely super cinematic when you do that. I found that a lot of the time lights, depending on what lights you get, they can be expensive. And so sometimes you can only really get like one or two. So in that case, I typically recommend just doing two, which are the ones I was mentioning earlier. You've got the one that's in front of you at that 45 degrees. And that's going to be the key light. That's kind of the main light that's lighting your face. Because it's the key, you know, the key to everything, life, the universe. And then the backlight or hair light, right? Which is the one that's behind you creating that edging. The fill light is meant to fill in the areas that are too dark. If your key light is creating too much contrast. So in some situations you want a more like balanced image, which means there's just not as much shadowiness. What I typically find is that for artists, you want a little bit more contrast, a little bit more of that
dramatic,
you know, feel to it. So usually with artists, you don't need that. The other thing with it is that unless you're filming in like a black room with all the lights off except for a couple lights, you're probably going to have some other light sources that are going to kind of function as that fill light for you. This is especially true if you're in a room with white walls, and a lot of people's homes are like white wall central. Right? That's what it was in here before we painted it. So that will create, the light will reflect off of the white walls and kind of act as a fill light. It'll act as sort of a general light in the room. And this is actually related to the positioning issue as well, because if you have a very small room, it's hard to get far enough away from the walls such that whatever lights you are shining on yourself are not also lighting up this like bright white wall. And the white wall very quickly becomes the brightest thing. And if it's the brightest thing, then that's going to get the attention visually in the video. And you want to make sure that you are the thing that has the most attention. So this is why I typically recommend, like I did here, that, you know, p- painting the walls black or just a darker color, just anything other than like super white, especially if it's a really small space, will give you way more control because the light is not bouncing off all these white walls and creating reflections, but also making distracting very bright areas. And if you're really close, this is the other thing about positioning, you can easily get shadows that are being cast from your body or your motion onto the wall, onto the white wall. And that will just be really distracting and pull viewers' eyes away from you as the performer.
Cool. Oh man, it's I really enjoy having conversations like this because I think I just tried to be like the Yoda of videography earlier, but there is something about just like who you are speaks louder than what you say. And so, I mean, when we have conversations like this, you can just tell that you're exuding with years and years and your 10,000 hours of experience, which makes it really helpful to master a topic like this. So I really appreciate you being here, sharing some of the lessons that you've learned. And also, I know that you have different ways that you support artists in helping to create high quality video products, from their songs and music videos. And of course, not everybody is going to be a good fit to have it done for you or work with you. But I know that every once in a while, you do open up some spots to work with you personally to record this kind of content. So could you share what do you look for in terms of someone that like your most successful case studies or artists that you work with? What are some of the qualities that usually define them? If someone's listening to this or watching this right now and is kind of wondering, would it make sense for me to reach out to Luke and work with him personally? Who would you say would be the right fit for that, and how should they connect?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things that I look at when talking to artists. The first is, where are they in their journey? So I believe that the best thing I can do to support artists is to help them be sustainable. And that means that they're able to continue doing their music and creating content in an ongoing fashion. Now, for most artists, I think that means, making their own content, learning how to do that, just because it's expensive to hire a videographer. And a lot of the time when you first kind of venture into hiring somebody like me, a lot of the time it's almost a little bit premature, just because you're embarking on your music seriously and you're like, okay, excuse me, you're being told that you need a lot of video, you need it to be high quality. And so a lot of time you're like, okay, let me find a videographer. And what I see happen a lot is that they'll reach out to me, we'll do something, we'll film something, great quality content. And for situations where they want to use it for booking and they want to use it for, like festivals and stuff like that, works great. But a lot of the time for social content, sometimes artists really aren't there just yet for it to make sense to hire me, because you have to create so much social content for it to be able to break through. It's not just, are you posting, stuff that's good? It's, are you posting stuff that's good for a long enough time that the algorithm starts to say, hey, this person maybe should get some more reviews. And you've got to try a lot of things. And if you're early on, you might not have developed enough of an individual kind of personal expression that's really powerful, that's going to capture people when we do the super high quality video. And then you spent however many thousands of dollars making content that doesn't actually move the needle for you with your social media content in terms of getting fans. So I see that happen, sometimes. And like, I'm down to shoot video for people, but I also want to make sure that what we're doing is moving them in the right direction. So a lot of people, I just kind of push them toward the course that I have that teaches them how to make their own high quality videos using iPhone, if that's something that's, important for them. And, once they go through that course, they practice it, you can shoot and edit a full video in 4 hours or less, and it's done. Looks super cinematic. It's great. Everything's cheap. The lights are like $30 each. You only need two, at least as a soloist. And the stands are like $20 each. So equipment's like nothing. So it's very sustainable for an artist that way. But a lot of artists are in the position where they have tried to make social content for a long time. They feel like they know who they are. They feel like their music's ready for that upgrade. And for them, it's more of a time issue. They don't have the capacity or the interest, or sometimes they feel like they don't have the ability to really learn these, you know, learn how to do video well on their own. And so for those people, that's more of the fit where, okay, let's jump on a call. Let's see if there's a way that would make sense for me to film your content. Let's come up with a plan for the next year where we get together for, you know, in person at one of the studios that I work with, and we shoot a ton of content for you. And then over the next year, you don't have to worry about what am I going to post today. You know, you just go to the little Google Drive and you just download the next video, right? That makes it way, way easier to manage creating a lot of content and posting consistently. Whereas if every day at the end of your hard day at work, you're like, oh man, I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do, come up with an idea, try to shoot it, feel like crap as I'm trying to shoot this the whole time. And then once I post it, it gets, you know, 20 views or 200 views on TikTok and no comments, and then just stops and never goes anywhere. That is like so demoralizing, you know, to go through that. And so if you're in the position where you're ready to work with somebody like that, then it makes sense, I think, to reach out. We can book a call. We can, you know, chat and see where you're at specifically. And on that call, I mean, we would go into kind of where you are in your journey and what makes sense in general. And so it's more of like, I want to just give a lot of value on that call. Like, what is the next step that makes sense? And then if it really is the right move to work together, then, you know, yeah, definitely make your way out to me in Maryland, DC, the Maryland, DC area, and we'll get something on the books and make a ton of amazing content for you. And typically that's like live and studio content. We can also do live concert content, but if you don't have a lot of people that are coming to the show, especially if you're a newer artist or, you know, you don't have a big fan base in the area, then I think it makes sense to really focus on the studio content and like music video style content that's optimized for that discovery on social media, where, you know, usually we'll film like full horizontal videos, but the middle section can be cropped for vertical. So you've really got something that you can use for full YouTube videos to gain fans on there and build consistent traction there. But you've also got, you know, hundreds of 30-second clips that you can post on TikTok and repost to every other platform.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is that one of the biggest mistakes that you see an artist make before, and I have seen this mistake a lot as well, is spending thousands or sometimes tens of thousands of dollars recording music videos. I mean, like a music video can easily go for $25,000 for like a cinematic, like high budget music video or more, you know, depending on you know, the artist and the producer. But what I'm hearing you say is that a lot of times that's a investment that may or may not be really a great return on your investment until you figure out kind of that core social media strategy and posting more regularly. And so that's one of the things that's probably one of the reasons that you've kind of created this specific, you know, kind of mentorship package version of this, so that people get that part of it and they're not just leaving with $25,000 music video, but they actually have a whole batch of content that they can post regularly, and that you actually help them through, you know, how do they build a healthy, sustainable, you know, music package. I imagine for the right person, that would just save so much time of having to kind of figure this stuff out on their own, a lot of stress of trying to understand what to post and when. So that's great that you offer that, and it's also, you know, really cool to be able to provide the video course for anyone that has the time to kind of do it on their own with not really the budget to invest.
I think it's with the you're talking about the $25,000, you know, music video situation. I think that you said it so well that, you know, if you're investing in something like that, people oftentimes don't think about, well, what's the next step? You know, what are my real goals with my music? And how is what I'm doing right now really aligned with that? Artists don't always think about what is success look like for them. What does success look like for them, really? And even though they have clarity in their mind about it, in the sense of if you really delved into it and kept asking questions, you could get to it like, oh, well, I want to be able to tour and have 1,000 people show up at each show across the country. Or I want to have, you know, 1 million monthly listeners on Spotify. Or I just want to be able to do this full time. That has specific things attached to it. Like, well, what's your full-time income right now? So you have to replace that. So that's $4,000 a month. Now that's your new goal. Well, do these videos help you get $4,000 a month? How does that happen? What's the mechanism? And then connecting it with that. And that could be booking shows. Once you get a couple of good gigs per month, if you're doing a couple of private house shows, you can easily cross that revenue threshold. So it's really like connecting it to that. And the $25,000 music video usually does none of that, because that's more, in general, it's more of an artistic statement. And it's not going to get pushed out in the way that other content that's more designed for virality will. And so I think of those assets, if you're going to get some really cool music videos that are really expensive, whenever they're either a great personal investment, just an artistic expression, just I want to make it like this, I just love it, I don't care how much it costs, but it's like for you as an artist, for what you want to create. Or it's something where it's for your fans. But if it's for your fans, it's premature if you don't have enough fans that would go and enjoy it. And so in that case, focusing on the social content, the discovery content that's going to draw people in, get them excited, you know, get them streaming your music, get them joining your email list, you know, buying merch, coming out to shows. Then when you've got a big music video that you spent a couple grand on or more, 25, 50, whatever you want to do, that makes a lot more sense in that situation. And it's also keeping you sustainable, because now you've got the budget and you're not jumping on something, you know, premature.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You know what that reminds me of is the fire analogy, in terms of like starting a fire where, you know, the fire represents your fan base. And it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, if you're just starting the fire doesn't exist yet, then sometimes having kindling, you know, to start the fire with, and kind of smaller social content, you know, that's going to be the most important thing to kind of create and start that fire. And then it makes more sense to have a big tree trunk that you're kind of putting in there, 25K music video, because you want to make sure that actually you have enough of a fire to justify, you know, throwing a big log into the fire pit. And if you're trying to just like start with a big log without a fire, then you can. It's a beautiful, beautiful log.
But it is.
But it's going to require, yeah, like a significant amount of traction in order to really justify like a 25K music video.
Yeah. And as an example, like I'm an artist, right? And so one of the big things that I try to do is like always do the things that I'm telling other people to do. And obviously like life happens. And so I try not to be too judgmental of myself based on exactly how well I'm doing that at like a particular moment. But with my album that I just released in June, 12 songs or 11 songs on it, one bonus track that was a derivative work, so it was a mashup and I couldn't release that on Spotify. Whatever. But I wanted to do a 12 video sci-fi short film series to go along with this. Because I love doing visual effects. They're super fun. Lasers, spaceships, all that kind of stuff. It's really cool. And each one's like 7 to 10 minutes long. And it's, you know, it's got an intro scene, then it's got the music video section where, you know, it's all a story the whole time, but the music video is in the middle. And then it's got like the cliffhanger ending, and it's going to be 12 of these. And I've only done 3, and each one got progressively more expensive because I've got to hire a team to do these. I can't do these entirely on my own. And I was definitely building these like massive, massive logs that would cost me thousands of dollars. And I didn't have a big fan base to release them to. And so I was spending all of this money on content that was super cool. Like you can go look it up, like, you know, search LJR When the Sky Began to Fall on YouTube. And you'll find, you know, like the whole, you know, series, and there's 3 of them you can watch. I like spray painted Nerf guns, and they're like laser blasters, all that kind of stuff. But man, the thing that really moved the needle for me with my music was when I started connecting with my story, like I talked about earlier, posting every day on TikTok and shooting all of that with my cell phone. And it doesn't matter if it looks super cinematic on there or not. It's more about the stuff that is really genuinely connecting with people. So now when I have super cinematic stuff and I'm connecting with people, that stuff does especially well. But you know, there are plenty of times where I just got out my phone And I just set it down in the car and I put headphones on and pretended to listen to the song and then sync that up on TikTok. Just a one take simple video. And man, that thing did 10,000 views and made a bump in my Spotify, you know, significantly for that one song. And I've gone from like 1,000 monthly listeners to like 4,000, almost 5,000, you know, in the span of like a couple months. And that really taught me, like, especially my own experience, like where does it make sense to really focus the most time? Now, I can make my own content. It's probably a lot more comfortable for me to shoot with my phone than for a lot of other people to feel confident about that in post. And again, that's where, like, if you want somebody to make that for you, totally, I'm your guy. But, you know, being sustainable and finding your way with that is always the number one.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome. So, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is that really the person is probably most likely to get value from applying to work with someone like yourself is the person who has limited amount of time and they want to, you know, rather than investing 10,000 hours kind of learning to do this on their own and stressing out about what should I post when and kind of creating their content calendar, which is what you found in practice to be like the actual most important thing for people to get what they want, which generally is to build an audience and connect with people and make an impact with their music. And so in order to create that kind of content, it requires a good strategy of posting, creating the right kinds of content, knowing what to post when, and creating a lot of social media posts. And so that seems like it'd be a pretty huge relief for the right person of not having to do that all on their own. So Luke, like I mentioned at the beginning, you are probably the person more than anyone else in my life that's transformed how I use videos and how I connect with people through videos. So thank you for that, the role that you've played in my life, my personal journey.
Yeah, man.
And this has been really fun connecting too and kind of going deeper into your journey and what you've created to be able to help solve that pain for artists of learning how to express themselves. And you know, for anyone here who's interested in connecting more, where's the best place for them to go to connect more?
Yeah, so you can definitely reach out to me over social media. I try to check all those. Instagram's probably the best one, you know, for that.
And what's your tag?
It's Luke Justin Roberts for my artist one.
Cool.
Well, yeah, let's do the business one, I guess. LJR Creative is the one. LJR. People always think I'm saying LGR.
LJR.
J for Jesus. Justin. Yeah, it's my initials. Sorry. And then creative. So it's pretty simple, but yeah, there should be a button like on this video or something where, like, you know, if you want to apply to work together, then you can fill it out and we'll set up a time to chat.
Cool. So wherever the big button is, yeah, somewhere like around this vicinity, they can go. Awesome. Well, Luke, you're awesome. And yeah, usually we end these the same way that we start them. So let's go 3, 2, 1.
Yeah!
Woo!
Thanks for having me, man.